Welcome to the Breakaway Podcast. We hope you're encouraged by the message and stick around for more at the end.
Well, it is a new day. It is a new year, a new semester. And with that, inevitably comes the new goals or visions of what we want to see happen. For some of us, we enter into a new semester like this, a new year like this, and we say, this will be the year I will lose 10 pounds. Or others go, this will be the year I gain 10 pounds. I will take as much creatine as it takes, you know. For some of us, we say, this is going to be the semester, baby, 4.0. It's going to happen. And for some of us, we say, this will be the semester where I will buy my books before the first round of tests. And physically appear in the classroom every once in a while, you know? And that's your goal. For some of us, we say, man, this is the springtime of love, and I am going to spend more time with that special someone. Others are thinking, I'm going to spend less time with certain someones. And there's a big talk coming tonight. For some of us, we are thinking, you know what? This is going to be the semester. I'm jumping out of the box, bro. I'm going to meet some new people. I'm getting out there. And for others of us, we look and say, this is the semester I'm going to go deeper in some relationships. I want to secure some bonds before I get out of this place. People I'm going to keep in touch with. But every one of us, whether you're like one of those calendar people, write your goals on your bathroom mirror kind of people, or whether you're those like, I don't know, I just thought about it in the car one time. Like wherever you are on that spectrum, all of us at some level, whenever you enter into a new semester, start thinking about this is my goal or my hope or my dream of what might happen this spring. And some of these goals, the motivation for them comes from a really healthy place, a healthy desire to improve yourself or maximize your potential. And I'm all about that. I'm all for that. But for some of us, if we're honest, that motivation to get better grades or be more social or get that position or become something more. What's driving that is this sense of inadequacy of I've got to get there, I've got to look like this, I got to get that person's attention, I got to be in this place because then I will have made it. Then I'll be somebody worth loving, noticing. For some of you say, I got to do that, so I'll quit being worthless. Or some of you say, I got to get there so I can prove people I'm the best. Or whatever, there's some drive in us that says, I'm doing these things, and the perspective that's driving it is a desire for worth. And that's not necessarily a good thing. That's not a healthy perspective. But the principle is true for all of us. Your perspective is going to determine your practice. How you see things will determine how you interact with them. And so as we start, I want to address our perspective, particularly if we're being driven by an unhealthy one. And the way I want to do it is I want to look at not your individual goals for the semester, as good or bad as they may be. I want to look at the main goal for why you exist, and then the perspective you're supposed to have as you pursue that goal. That's what I want to do. So in the few minutes we have, I just want to talk about why you exist on the planet and how you're supposed to think about it as you pursue the goal for the reason why you've been made. So no big deal. But to do that, I think if we can get it right, the right perspective of who we are and how we're meant to pursue what we're meant to pursue, it will influence a million other decisions in how we see us, God, life, and people. So we got to address the mind tonight. And the first thing I want to look at really is the goal. What are you here for? And real briefly, the Bible will say that you are here to commune with God. And I love that word commune because it just wraps up so many things. The Bible says in Colossians 1:16 that all things are made by him and for him. You're made for God. Jesus said, now this is eternal life, that they may know you, the one true God, that you are made to know him. Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? And he says, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. You are made for God. You're made to know him. You're made to love him. You're made to commune with him. And so here's the shocker sentence of the night. Get ready for it. To love someone, you need to communicate with them. Love requires communication. It does.
that if I want to have affections for you stirred, I've got to interact with you at some level. So I had a couple come to me yesterday that's engaged, and they came up and said, do you have any books you would recommend? And I know what they're asking. They're saying, do you have any tips, any advice we can get to help us commune with each other better, to talk with each other better, to do things, to say things, to interact in a way that will promote intimacy? They're looking for a way to go deeper in love with each other, and the only way to do that is through communicating, because men can't read minds. Ladies, you have to use words. And guys, it's the same way. They don't know what you're thinking. You've got to say it, preferably in a letter with, you know, a nice stamp on it or some kind of flower attached or whatever. But you've got to communicate. So love requires communication. And so we are made to love God, to know God, to communicate with God. That's why you're here, incidentally. I don't know if you've thought about that. I don't know if you've, as you've looked at this spring, as you've thought of your goals. I'm going to get these grades. I'm going to get this job. I'm going to get this place, this position. I don't know if you've thought about, but you're made right now to commune with God, to go deeper in intimacy with Him. Have you set any goals there? Has that been your view for the spring? Because that's why you're here on the planet. Now, the sad thing is, for a lot of us, if we're just honest, we're not real pumped up by that. We don't get real jazzed about, oh, I'm here to just be intimate with God. That doesn't excite you. And I think that's a real tragedy, if that's you. And I think the reason you're not excited about that potential of having a deep communion with the Almighty, the fountain from which all good flows, I think the reason you're not excited about that is because of a bad perspective. Something's wrong in the way you view that glorious goal and the God who is the goal for your existence. And it's interesting, Jesus speaks about how we are meant to engage God in this text that they just read, this greatest of all sermons. And in it, he addresses some of the questions you may have. Some people say, okay, but I know I'm made to pursue God, be intimate with God, talk with God, but here's the thing, I'm not good at the religious stuff. I know there's performances you got to do. There's little things you're supposed to do. And some of you, even now, people are standing up and raising their hands and they're clapping and you're like, I don't know all the rules. I don't know what y'all are doing. And they brought me here and I'm out as soon as this is over, right? And you go, I just don't know all the rules of how we're supposed to do this. But what's interesting is Jesus is talking. Did you notice? He's going to say, hey, you're made to commune with God, but there's two ways I don't want you to do it. And the first way he says is, I don't want a performance. Don't make it a show. He says, when you pray, don't be like the hypocrites. They love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at street corners that they may be seen by others. He says, I don't want that. If you're saying, Ben, I don't know how to do all the flowery praying and real effuse deal, he's not saying it's wrong to pray out loud. He's not saying it's wrong to pray in an ecstatic way in front of people. He's saying it's wrong to do that with the motivation of being seen by others. He's saying, don't make me a promoter that I'm going to use God to be awesome in the eyes of other people, which, quite frankly, can happen in Christian circles. As weird as that sounds, some people can do that. I'm going to buy just the right Bible that when I pull it out, people go, ooh, and you're like, that's right. Look at it. It's labeled. Watch, you know? Or you go, I'm going to wait until the bridge hits, and right when the drums hit, that's when I know I'm supposed to go like this. And people will go, man, that guy loves God. Did you see the way he just hit the beat there? And there's just ways to do it, you know, and ways to talk about God, certain words you can use. Like, man, he incorporated the word sovereignty in his prayer three times. That is unbelievable. And, you know, we can just kind of do things to show people we've got a spiritual level of awesomeness, right? And God says, I'm not up for that. Don't use me as your promoter, that you're using me to make yourself look cool in front of other people. I'm not into a relationship like that. I'm not looking for the show, man. So I remember going to Benihana's one time, and there was this guy there that he stood up in front of the room, and he was just like, you know, everybody, and he just starts going into this long speech about himself, about the way he likes to joke with people and his personality and his style and all this stuff. And I'm like, who is this guy? And he just sort of captured the room. And he just talked for on and on about himself. And then finally he was like, you know, so there's this girl here. And he slowly kind of turns and spends a fraction of the time about her. And then he hits a knee and proposes to her. And so we all sort of clap out of obligation. But this guy ate up a lot of clock talking about himself. And it was weird. And when he got done, they left. And, you know, Benihana kind of situation, there'll be other people at the table that were not necessarily all came together. So I asked the other people at the table, were y'all with him? Were y'all friends with them? And everyone was like, no, I thought he was your friend. What? No, I don't know him. What? And it turns out nobody in the room knew him. It was just these two people that showed up.
So it wasn't like he was doing this public engagement in order for his friends to celebrate.
You can do public engagements for your friends to celebrate. He was doing it with people that weren't his friends. We don't know him.
And he was doing it just to get attention for himself. It wasn't really about her at all.
And some people, we come to religious stuff and we play the games, and God says, I'm not interested in that. That you kind of do all this to get their attention, to get her to like you, to get him to trust you. He says, I'm not into that. Don't use me like that. So if you don't have all the words right or the format right, he doesn't care. He's not interested in that. He wants a heart that says, I want to commune with you. So he says, hey, go in your closet. Talk to me there. Go where there's no show. And if the only time you talk to him is in a crowd, you never talk to him privately, you need to check your heart. He says, I'm not looking for the show. I'm not a promoter. And then he says, and don't manipulate me either. Some people say, well, you know, Ben, I don't know that God cares. You tell me to talk to God, commune with God. I just don't know that he's listening. I don't know that he's up there. And so the next thing Jesus addresses is, hey, don't talk to him in a way that's sort of this desperate attempt to manipulate some deity up there. He says, when you pray, don't heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do. Other translations say, don't use meaningless repetitions, or don't keep on babbling, is what the NIV say. And I like that, because the word in Greek is the word bata logeo. Logeo means to speak, and the word bata, some people say it's Aramaic for idleness. But most commentators agree that it's an onomatopoeia, which is a word that sounds like what it is, like bam or pow. And so what Jesus is saying is, don't babble. Or literally, they don't say the word babble, they say the word bada. So he says, when you pray to me, don't go bada, 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 bada. That's what he's saying. He's like, don't do that, don't do that. See, because back then there were people who would just pray really long prayers, and it's not wrong to pray long prayers. But he says, they do it for they think they'll be heard for their many words. He says, there's people that will just go on and on and on, and it's sort of this desperate plea for attention, and they think if I just keep sort of saying everything I can think of, I'll finally sort of twist his arm. And that's the way the pagans of that day would do it. They were scared of the deities. And so they would do these religious services with chanting to try to manipulate them. And it wasn't a relationship of trust. It wasn't a relationship of love. And God says, don't talk to me like that. I'm not a promoter who you use to get points, to get a political office. He said, and I'm not a capricious king that you got to just desperately beg to listen to you. That's not my style. He says, when you come to me, the goal of your life is communion with me. And the perspective I want you to have is you commune with me like a father. Like a father. He says, don't be like them, for your father knows what you need before you ask him. And let me tell you something, that's the scandal of this prayer. See, in Jesus' day, the way people would pray to God is they would link together as many titles for God as possible. And it was a kind of a way of showing off. You'd be like, oh, most sovereign above high, light of very light, God of very God, oh, king of all things. You know, and they would just kind of see how many titles you could get in a row without, you know, repeating yourself. And people would be like, man, he got 17 or whatever, you know. And they would just list off all these titles. And Jesus says, no, when you pray, he says, pray like this, our Father in heaven. And then he launches into the prayer. And that would have scandalized some people. They were like, wait a minute, that was only one. And the other thing that was weird about it is he called God Father. They didn't do that. They didn't call him Dad. That felt a little too close. And yet here Jesus is, and he says, look, don't use him like a promoter. Don't beg him like he's this disinterested, distant king. When you come to him, I want you to commune with him. I want you to love him. And here's the perspective you're meant to have. You come to him like he's your father, like he's your dad. And here's the neat thing about that is, you know, God doesn't have gender. Male and female are created in his image. He's not a dude. And he could have picked any metaphor to describe himself. But over and over again in the Bible, and over again through Jesus, he says, when you think of me, call me Father. Because there's something about fatherness he wants you to get and connect with him. And what I think he's trying to say is, I want you to see me as a beautiful combination of power and love. That's what a good father is. A good father is strong, and a good father is loving. And so he says, pray to your Father
in heaven. That he loves you, that he cares, and that he is strong enough to take care of you. He says, that's how I want you to come to him. And I just want you to think for a second, when you talk to God, when you think about God, do you see him that way? Do you see him as distant? You don't even know if he's there. Do you see him as disappointed in you and frustrated? How do you see him? Jesus says, when you think about him, I want you to think that he cares enough about you to listen, and he's strong enough to take care of you. That's what I want you to think. And I just think that's marvelous to contemplate. What would life be like if you walked out of here knowing the God of the universe is my dad? He loves me, and he can take care of me. He's strong, and he's loving. And so many of you, the reason you don't pray, honestly, is because you don't believe one of those two things. You either think God doesn't care about you, or he's maybe not even there to answer your prayer request. And so you don't talk to him. But he says, I want you to know I am strong and I am loving. And if you can get that mindset, walk out of here saying, my job is to commune with God, and up in the heavens, he loves me and he's strong enough to care for me. Do you know how that will revolutionize your life? You won't be anxious. Matthew 6, just a few verses later, he says, don't be anxious, saying, what shall we eat? What shall we drink? What shall we wear? The Gentiles seek these things, and your Father knows that you need them. It says your Father knows what you need, so don't be anxious. And it's not like, don't be anxious because he knows what you need, like he's aware of it. Like, oh, I see they're hungry. Yeah, because I know all things. I see all things. It says he knows what you need, and the idea of that is he is aware of it, and he cares enough to meet the need. Can you imagine leaving here and not being worried about anything? How would that impact the way you live? That you could leave here and say, you know what? God knows what I need to eat. He knows what I need to drink. He knows what I need to exist. It's going to be okay. Can you imagine living like that? I remember having a young student in my ministry that he had just come to know God, and he wanted to walk with him, and he had discovered he had a musical gift. And he came to me and he was like, you know what, Ben? I think I'm meant to play the guitar and lead worship. And he says, here's the thing. I don't have any money. Like, I'm poor. I can't figure it out. So I got to figure out a way to buy a guitar. And so he came to me a couple weeks later and he's like, Ben, I figured it out. He said, dude, a buddy of mine has downloaded this program illegally, and I'm going to sell it to people and raise the money to buy this guitar. And he says, it's perfect. And I said, wait a second. Let me stop you there. You're going to steal something and then sell it in order to buy a guitar to worship Jesus with. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, you can't do that. And he just looked at me like, what? You're out of your mind. And I said, bro, you only get one story in life. And you don't want that to be your story. How did you become a worship leader? Well, it's a great story. I stole things. I said, you can't do that. And he said, what am I supposed to do? I'm like, I don't know, dude. You're supposed to pray. And you know, whenever you say that to someone, that just sounds so like, I'll just pray about it. And they're like, rah, rah, rah. He's like, just pray? And I was like, yeah, dude, seriously. I said, trust God with your life. Don't be anxious about it. Don't freak out about it. Pray. Trust him. Trust that he cares about you. And so you know what he did? And it doesn't always work out this way, but no kidding. He went to his mailbox and some aunt he barely knew was like, I closed out this bank account I didn't know I had, and here's a check for exactly the amount you need to buy a guitar, you know? And he just got the envelope and was like, I get it. I get it. That was God saying, hey, I'm your dad. I know what you need, and I'm going to take care of you. You wouldn't be anxious. Let me tell you something. If you really believe this leaving here, you wouldn't be depressed. Jesus said it in Luke. He says, what father among you, if a son asked for a fish, would give him a serpent? Or if they asked for an egg, would give him a scorpion? He says, what dad would do that? A kid comes up and says, Dad, I'm hungry. Can I have an egg? Yeah, sure, son. Here's a snake. All right, he's like, what dad would do that? Which I just love that about Jesus, incidentally. He's like, seriously. You know what I mean? Like, I just wish I knew his tone. And then he says, and if you who are evil know how to give good gifts to your kids, how much more will the Father in heaven give the Holy Spirit to those who ask for him? He says, if you evil people take care of your kids, God is the fountain of all good. Do you think he's not going to take care of you? If you really walked out of here thinking, I am made to commune with God, and he loves me, and he's strong enough to meet my needs, he is power and affection combined in my life. If you walk out with that, you won't get depressed. There's a book, Pilgrim's Progress, a beautiful allegory. And in it, there's a guy, Christian. And Christian is on the path to eternal life. And he steps off of it into a field he shouldn't go into. He trespasses. And there a giant named Despair beats him up and throws him in a castle called Doubt. And he stays in doubt and despair. And what's interesting is Bunyan wrote this story, this great Puritan pastor. It was the most interesting thing. This big ogre of a giant named Despair is beating the Christian as he locks him up in doubt. And then it says, and then the giant would go home. And his wife would ask him, how'd your day go? And he was like, ah, it's good. I was beating this guy, and it's going fine. And then his wife, whose name was Diffidence, would say, hey, tomorrow, show him some skulls of people you've killed, then beat him. And for the rest of several pages, this wife is giving the giant advice on how to beat the Christian. And you're reading this, and you go, what does this mean? And I was reading it, and I don't know what the word diffidence means. I had to look it up. And the word diffidence means shyness or reticence. And so I'm like, this man's writing an allegory. Let me just put it together. Shyness or reticence is keeping the Christian locked up in doubt and beaten by despair. What does Bunyan mean? And what he was trying to say was, your shyness, your reticence to go to God with your problems is what's keeping you in despair and doubt. And so what finally saves Christian is he remembers he had a key in his pocket called promise. And it was the promises of God. And he was like, oh yeah. And he just unlocked the door and left. It was the most anticlimactic part of the story. He's like, well, that was incredibly easy. And there's a point to it. For many of you, you are so discouraged. I don't know where I'm going to go in life. I don't know what's happening to me. I feel so deficient. I feel not enough. I feel so, and you go, wait a second. You are locked up in doubt and despair because of your reticence to go to God, because you've forgotten his promise that he's a father and that he loves you. And so we're meant to see him as a father who loves you enough to listen to you and is strong enough to meet your needs. I want to introduce you to somebody at this point. And we weren't sure if she was going to make it, but it looks good so far. Can I hold her?
Yeah.
Oh, she's awake, too.
She is awake.
This is little Hannah Ray, everybody. Say hi, Hannah. This is my wife, Donna, by the way. Yeah. This is about 5,000 of your closest friends. She's about 80 percentile in terms of weight. So she's my little chunk of love. But let me tell you something. I followed someone's advice that they gave me when she was born. He said, whenever you hold your daughter, think about your theology. And so every morning when I've woken up and hung out with her and carried her, I've thought about, God says he's a father. What does that mean? And I remember holding her in the kitchen one day and thinking, she would not exist without us. The only reason she's here is because of our will, our power, and our grace. That's the only reason she's here. We decided to have her, and we had the ability to bring her into existence. And she only continues to exist because of our power and our grace. She can't feed herself. She can't really do anything. And so she exists because of our grace. She produces no value around the house. She doesn't clean up. She doesn't pay the bills. She's not pulling her weight at all. In fact, we typically are having to clean up after her, including her own waste, all day long. And so she provides us no value. And yet, we gladly take care of her. Why? Because we delight in her. Because she's made in our image. She's our little girl. And we love her.
And that's all. And so I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking about, you exist because God willed it to be so. The only reason you continue to exist is because he wills it to be so. You don't provide him any value. He doesn't need you. He was fine before you were here. But he likes you, and he loves you. Not because of what you've done, but because in his heart, he's just decided to. And that's a comforting thought. What do I want her to know about me? I want her to know that I'm loving enough to listen to her. And I want her to know that I'm strong enough to meet her needs. And I want her to know I'm wise enough to know when and how to meet her needs. And I want her to know I'm committed to her good. I want her to know that I'm loving, strong, wise, and committed. Your God is loving enough to listen to you. He wants to. He's strong enough to take care of you. And he's wise enough to know how to go about doing that. But he's committed to your good. He who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it. What do I want her to know about her relationship with me? I want her to know it's unshakable. It will never stop. She is my daughter, and nothing will change that. If she moves overseas, she's still my daughter. If she makes a mess of her life, she's still my kid, right? I may take away her car and cut her off financially, but she's always my girl. And when we die, on our tombstones will be father and daughter. That relationship is unshakable, and nothing she can ever do will ever alter that relationship. Ever. How do I want her to treat me? I want her to obey me. When I say to do something, I want her to do it. And I want her to trust that I'm not just saying it to be capricious. Hey, go run in a circle. You know. I want her to know that when I'm telling her to do something, it's for her good. It's to make her better. It's the best thing. I want her to honor me. Not because I'm insecure. I was fine before I had a 3-month-old honoring me. Right? It's not this weird vacancy in me I'm trying to fill. I want her to honor me because it's good for her soul to honor her father. We've all watched TV and seen people who didn't have fathers they honored. They become brats. They're shallow people. And I don't want her to be. So I want her to honor me for her good. And I want her to love me. I want us to have a loving relationship where she knows that I want to get in the car and take her on a date. And I want to lay in the bed next to her and hear her heart. I want her to tell me all about her day. And it's not because I don't know the facts. I could Facebook stalk her if I need to know the details. But that's not the kind of relationship I want. I want her to tell it to me, and I want to hear her say it, and I want her to say how she feels about it, because I want her to know I love her, and I delight to hear the heartbeat of my little girl. Love, commitment, strength, wisdom. I'm never leaving. I'm going to take care of you. I want you to trust me. I want you to obey me. I want you to love me. And this will all work out great. That's what I want. And you've been so good. I was nervous about this moment. I think she likes the lights. You want to take her back? He's loving enough to listen to you. He wants to. He's strong enough to meet your needs. It's not a problem at all. And it's no burden to do that. He's wise enough to know how to guide your life. Even if you don't know the particulars, he does. And trusts that he's wise enough to handle them. And he's committed to you. He's not going to drop you. He's not going to leave you. He's not going to say, that one's getting annoying, and kick you out of the car. He loves you. No matter what you do, you're his. Now, there's something important I got to say before we wrap this up tonight, and it's this. Not everybody is his kid. Not everybody is a child of God. Creation does not declare sonship. It doesn't. God only has one begotten son, and you're not it, and neither am I. The only way we get in is through adoption. Because God created us, and we have all, like sheep, gone astray, each one his own way. And when the Bible describes us in our natural state, it says, by nature, you're an object of wrath. All of us have walked away from God, and we all know there's something wrong with us. Everybody does. That's why bookstores are filled with self-help books, because we all know we need help. We all know we're sick. We just keep misdiagnosing it. If I can just get a little education, or a little bit of money, or a little bit better body, or that special someone, then I'll be complete, and it doesn't work. Educated, rich, attractive, married people implode every day. It's not enough. Our sickness is unto death. We've been severed from our head. And yet God, in his mercy, at the fullness of time, sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons. And because you're sons, God has sent forth the spirit of his son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So you're no longer a slave, you're a son. And if a son, then an heir through God. We're all broken. Jesus came to be a healer. We were all lost. He came to find us. We were all dirty. He came to be clean for us and then clean us. He lived under the law perfectly when we could not. He died and took the wrath of God for us. And he rose and says, through me, you get to be adopted as sons. And so I pray for all of you. My hope this semester is that you would come to know the only true God and Jesus Christ whom he sent. Jesus was asked, what is the will of the Father? What does God want? And Jesus said one thing, believe in the one he sent. When you put your faith in Jesus, you become a son of God. And if a son, then an heir. When I die, she gets it all. And God says, when you come into heaven with me, it's a party, it's a banquet, and all I have is yours because I love you and I'm strong enough to care for you. And so I hope as you leave here, I don't know what you came in here nervous about or worried about or stressed about or striving for, but I hope you will leave saying, my job this semester above every other thing is to commune with God. Be honest with him. He's not looking for a show. He's not looking for this begging. He's just looking for an honest communing with my heart. And I can come to him in confidence because he loves me and he cares. And that's my hope for you this semester.
Well, welcome to the Breakaway Podcast. My name is Jeremy, and I'm sitting here with Ben Stewart, and we want to say welcome to 2012.
Yeah.
We have been taking a break here over kind of the holidays, and it's been a while, Ben, since we've been doing this, and so it's fun to be back.
That's true. Yeah. It was interesting being back in Reed, getting ready. It's like, okay, we got to remember how to do this, mm-hmm. and but it was just so fun to be back. I mean, it was a great break, but I missed our students, missed that scene, and it was a great comeback. Mm-hmm. Such a great night,
amazing night. I don't think we've ever had a spring kickoff like this.
Yeah,
and since I've been around, since maybe you've been around, but
well, I mean, this fall was the most people, the most intensity we've ever had in a semester, and so I thought, I didn't know if that was just kind of a thing, and thank God for that, and who knows. So we were sitting around at the beginning going, all right, like 20 people going to show up, we'll all worship, it'll be great. And then we just had more of them come than ever in a spring, and they came ready, and it was awesome. So We're rocking, man. Yeah. So it's great.
I mean, literally rocking. Like, I think when they opened the doors to Reed Arena last night, because we normally try to open like 30 minutes or more before Breakaway starts, and people just came running in, and it was exciting. I mean, just watching students so ready to be there and be back for another semester. And I think we had over 5,700 students show up, which is a kind of a historic thing for us. We've never had that many in the spring.
In the spring.
It really is like cool seeing the momentum. Just God's carrying this along, and we're just kind of along for the ride right now.
Yeah, man.
So it's fun. And then over the break, you got to just chill with your women.
My women. Yeah. yeah, man, it was so nice. Our doctor told us, hey, maybe don't travel much with Hannah because she was so little. And we were like, done. Not a problem. So we told family, if you want to see us, we're over here. And it was awesome. Mm-hmm. Just loved that, man. And then I traveled to, you know, go to Passion, which was incredible, and went to a conference of pastors from Egypt and Dallas, which was just unreal what God is doing in Egypt. So much pain right now. So much prayer needs to go in that direction, of especially as their government is so in question. But God is doing powerful things there. I mean, unreal things there. And so Passion was amazing, with 40,000+ students worshiping. So incredible. This meeting of pastors was incredible. And so it was a great break, but just had in my heart, just couldn't wait to be back too. Mm-hmm. So we're off to a good start, man.
Really great start. And last night we had Jeff Johnson leading worship with us in mm-hmm. Jordan, and that was really fun. And then we also were able to announce some new things that we're doing this semester, which is really exciting. So we're going to talk about that toward the end of this part of the podcast. So hang on with us. We're going to announce some really exciting things toward the back of the back part of this podcast.
Very exciting.
But the reason we do this part is because we found over the years that you, Ben, mm-hmm. have lots of notes that you bring to the table.
That's true.
That you can teach with. And a lot of times things get cut out because of just the time crunch that we are on. And then also just love that we get to maybe come circle back around some things during this moment, just so that people can have clarity, or you can kind of bring some more clarity or correction to some things. And so I'm excited to hear from you what your thoughts are about last night, and the fact that we kicked off this new kind of semester with a new focus around the Lord's Prayer and a series of talks based off of that. So
it was just wonderful over the break. I just grabbed a bunch of commentaries and books and just sat with the Lord and was just thinking about just the profoundness that we are made to commune with God. And Jesus says, you want to know how? Here's how. And he didn't give us the prayer as like, say these exact words. We tend to do that. I mean, I grew up doing that at football games and stuff, which isn't the worst thing in the world to do. I'm not dogging it, but, he said, pray like this. It's meant to be a model. And Spurgeon made jokes about that. He's like, when you build a little model of a house, you don't move into the model. You know, it's like, it's just to show you what could be. And so this prayer is sort of this outline of here's the priorities to have, the values that shape the way you interact with him. And so being able to do that over these next couple of weeks, dwell in this is what God cares about. This is what God thinks about. I want to say it all right now. I'm just so full with this stuff, but I'm going to have to hold back.
Hold back for now.
But I will clarify a couple things from last mm-hmm. night, just for people, because we had to move quickly through some things. Mm-hmm. Jesus is, this is the Matthew version, and he presents the prayer a little different in Luke. It's in a different context, different town, different conversation, and we'll get into all that later, but in the Matthew context, he starts with these ways not to approach him. And the first one has more of like a Jewish flavor. He says, don't be like the hypocrites. And he's not saying all Jews are hypocrites, but there are ones that when they go to the synagogues, which were primarily Jewish places to worship, he says they stand and pray to be seen by others. And some people read that And then he says, so go in your closet and pray. And I was looking at an article the other day, and this guy was ripping into Tim Tebow and quoting Matthew 6 and saying, see, you're supposed to pray in your closet. This guy's a hypocrite. And you go, no, Jesus is not anti-praying in front of people. The prayer will start with our Father. It's meant to be a communal prayer. We pray together. And Jesus will pray in front of people. He'll pray in crowds. This is not anti-praying out loud or praying in public or displaying your faith. It's anti-doing it so that they may be seen by others. His issue is, what's your motivation? And if you're using spirituality to get attention for you, and Jesus and God are a means to an end, and that end is your awesomeness, he's not into that. He's not into being used that way. So that was the first piece. It's not anti-public prayer. It's anti that motivation for public prayer. And the second one is, you know, he says, don't heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do. So one, it was a primary Jewish way of praying in those days where they could stand and make a show of it. And he says, don't make a show of it. And then the second way, he's like, what the Gentiles would do is they would babble on. And some people hear that and they say, so is he saying not to pray like long prayers or pray a lot or pray repeatedly? And you say, no, he's not saying that, because Jesus prayed long prayers. Jesus prayed all night on several occasions. So he was comfortable with praying a long time, and he didn't consider praying all night to be heaping up words. So he's not anti-praying a long time, and he's not anti-praying the same thing over and over again. He told his disciples a parable of a woman going to an unjust judge and continually every day bringing her request. And finally the judge granted her what she desired, even though he was wicked. And his idea is, if persistence can win over a wicked judge, how much more will it win over a father who wants to meet your request anyway? So he told that parable at one point. So he's not anti-praying a lot. He's not anti-praying repeatedly for the same thing. What he says, and you see the contrast here, is he says, don't heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do, for they think they'll be heard for their many words. Don't be like them, because your Father knows what you need before you ask it. And so the contrast he's saying is, they are just heaping up these words. They're babbling. What a lot of them would do in that day is they would chant, because they thought, if we just keep chanting, we can sort of manipulate the spiritual plane. And it was almost this mindless, like Hare Krishna kind of thing, you know, where you just repeat it over and 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 over, and just think you're going to sort of manipulate the spiritual world to bend to your will. And he says, don't do that. Because they think if they say enough words, they'll kind of guide the spiritual plane. He says, no, the perspective I want you to have is, he's a father. He's aware of what you need. And it's funny for that to be a motivation for pray. Pray to God because he already knows what you need anyway. Some people go, wouldn't that be a motivation to not pray? But I love the way Chrysostom said it. He says, we pray not to inform God and not to instruct God, but to become intimate with God. That's why you do it. I used the illustration last night of my daughter. When she gets older, I could Facebook stalk her and learn what's going on in her life. I could be aware of the facts. And God is aware of the facts of your life. But I want her to tell me about her day, because I want to engage with her, because I love her. And that's what God's like. He wants to engage you. And so that's the distinction there. Don't pray like they do, but pray to him like he's a father. He's aware of what you need, but he wants you to engage him intimately as you process that need. It's not to inform him, it's to interact with him. And certainly tell him how you wish things were, how you'd like them to go, and that sort of thing. Last distinction I would make, I had a number of people come to me at the end who struggle with depression at some level. And they were just concerned about any kind of hope for them. And I would say, we all struggle with different things, and we don't get to pick what we struggle with. Every person in that room has some besetting sin that they would love to not have. And so I told them, if you struggle with discouragement, depression, that may be something that it may be for a season and goes away, or it may be something that comes in recurring seasons throughout your life. A number of great
heroes of the faith experienced seasonal bouts of depression. John Bunyan, who I quoted last night, who wrote The Pilgrim's Progress, wrestled with it. He wrote about it in Grace Abounding, one of his great books. Charles Spurgeon wrestled with it. Martin Luther wrestled deeply. I took great comfort in college reading about Martin Luther's struggles with depression, because I thought if God could use him mightily while he struggled, God can use me mightily while I'll struggle. And so the trick is not you shouldn't struggle anymore. The trick is, do you struggle well? When you're in the midst of difficulty, do you respond to it well? And so the distinction I was making when I said, if you understood God being your father, you'd be less depressed. I didn't mean if you're depressed, that means you just don't trust God and you're a loser. Some of you may struggle with discouragement. What I mean is some people will linger in it an inordinately long period of time because they don't fight well in the midst of it. So it may come and you don't get to control when the clouds roll over. You do get to control how you act within it. And what Bunyan was advocating, what Jesus was advocating, what I'm advocating is when the storm clouds do roll in, when discouragement does come, you fight to remember the promises that he is a father. And I will not doubt his love and doubt his care and doubt his power when I struggle. I will fight to trust him. William Cooper wrote beautiful hymns about that as he struggled with his depression. Behind a frowning providence, he wears a smiling face. You know he's good, even when life looks hard. And so that's my distinction there. But there's more we could say, but we'll hold on to it. I will say, just last thing, though, if you are just listening to the audio, you may want to go check out our video at some point, too, because little Hannah made an appearance and just did incredible. I thought she was going to freak out, and there was none. So,
no freaking out.
I got my little hero.
She liked it up there, I think.
I think she did too. She seemed enamored with the lights. So she did great, man.
She's so cool. So, well, yeah, it was such a beautiful night of God really ministering to a lot of people. You could just tell he was being the father that we know and we trust and believe in. And So it was great at the end of Breakaway just getting to have Jordan Johnson kind of sing over people and then them just kind of personally respond in whatever way God was kind of working in their life. And just looking out and seeing the over 5,700 plus people there and knowing that God knows every one of their needs and he knows where they are in life and that he even brought them there. Like he drew all those students there. We didn't do it. Like we didn't know if anybody's going to show up. And so it's just great to know we have such a loving, amazing father and he is at work here at A&M, and we're so grateful to do what we do here for another year.
And my hope was to give them a mental picture of it, like a picture you can grip onto. So when you're beating yourself up and you start ascribing that voice to God, you can stop and say, if I had a child in my arms, would I talk to this child the way this voice in my head is talking to me? And if the answer is no, I wouldn't, then you need to ask yourself, do I think I'm a better father than God? You would never talk to a child that way, but you think God would talk to you that way. You be careful with that. See what I mean? And so I wanted to give them a mental picture of what God's fatherly love and even his fatherly discipline would look like. So I hope it was helpful.
I think it was.
Yeah.
So looking forward to more. And I know we've got some exciting new things that are happening this new school year of 2012, the spring. And so all I'm going to say is buckle your seatbelts because I think every podcast we're probably going to unveil some new exciting thing. It seems like we've got so many cool things just rolling down this calendar here that you just better be ready.
I'm telling you, it's coming at you. It really is. Every week it's like, and this is happening, people.
Yeah. So we're recording the podcast right now in our conference room / library here in the office. And we've got a big like wall that has our calendar on it. And so Ben and I are both looking at this thing and just kind of going, get ready, people. Ooh, it's going to happen. But what's one of the very first things that I know you announced it at Breakaway last night to the students, but for the podcast world that we're really excited about, what's one of the first things coming up here?
Yeah, we got one we'll talk about here, and that is something that is the product of a lot of prayers and burden in our hearts as a staff, and that is over the years we've met with a number of student leaders. And at A&M, there's a real leadership culture. Students are put in situations where they truly and honestly guide and shape organizations and make decisions that affect people's lives. And it's amazing that that culture exists. And we found a number of students have an experience similar to mine. When I was in college, I was given leadership positions. And as I got into them and realized the weight of it, I just thought, man, I don't feel equipped to do this well. Like I'm going to do some things right. I'm not stealing money or something, you know, but I'm just like, I'm just not, I don't know that I'm doing this the best I can. I need someone to think this through with or help me or guide me. And so a lot of our young leaders here don't really have that sort of mentor role over them. And so we've had many come to us from all different organizations, all different kinds. And so as a response to that, last year we did these little coffee dessert meetings with different groups from the core and the Greek world and Christian worlds, and just ask them as leaders, you know, would it help you to have a time of focus sort of training on leadership? And to a person, they all said, yes, please. And so our response is to put on a conference this spring, and we're just calling it the LEAD Conference. And it's going to be a Friday night, a Saturday, and have main sessions of general leadership principles that they can apply to their organizations, and then breakouts that are very targeted towards different contexts people might lead in, a military context, a business one, a Christian context, a government, a worship leading context. And so people can go and hear very specific, here are some things to think about as you work within your very unique realm. And I'm just very fired up about that. I think it's going to be real helpful. We're bringing out people that are familiar with those respective worlds and have flourished in them. And so I just can't wait for students to jump on board with us with that. And so any students welcome, they can bring their lead teams, they can bring their friends and come and interact with the material, then leave and bounce it around with each other. But it'll be February 3rd and 4th. So it's coming fast. But registration's already open online. They can go check it out, and we'll see how we do. We're pumped up about it, man.
Absolutely. So if you'd like to register for the conference or want to go find out more information, you can go to our website, breakawayministries.org, and you'll click on the link to the LEAD Conference right on our homepage. And so we'd love to invite everybody to come. Really excited about it. And so I know that this is definitely something that's been prayed about for a while now, and we're just can't believe it's here. Mm-hmm. So excited. Well, Ben, you've got your back's doing better, I guess. You've got some.
Keep praying.
Yeah. You look good.
I'm better than in August. Mm-hmm. You know, in August I couldn't really walk, and so I'm much better than that. Mm-hmm. I'd love to get off medication and. Mm-hmm. And be a little more mobile. So if you're still praying for my back, don't persevere. Don't
yes,
give up.
Yes.
Go for it. But cool. Yeah, man. But I can hold my baby girl, and that's what's important. So.
Well, yeah, since we kind of took a break, I know people were kind of wondering how you're doing, and then they can definitely know how Hannah's doing if they watch the video podcast. So
she's certainly healthy. She's eating well.
She definitely looks like she's happy, well fed. And then the last thing we're going to say is next week we're going to be at Rudder Auditorium on campus. And for us, that means that's 2 hours. We don't just get to do one breakaway because it's not large enough to hold everybody. Mm-hmm. And so what we would love is if you're listening to this and you're planning on coming to breakaway next week, come early. Come to the 7 o'clock, because that will give us more space for the 9, which is normally when people show up. And in the past, we've challenged like the upperclassmen, juniors and seniors, to give the freshmen and sophomores the 9 o'clock hour and just mm-hmm. come early and be mature, responsible upperclassmen. So hopefully they'll respond, and we'll pack everybody in. And I just can't wait to be at Rudder next week.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah. So you got anything else you want to share?
I just think you're the greatest, man.
Well, thank
We've
you.
We've got a great team. It's fun doing this together.
We do. We've got amazing new volunteers already and trained. And so we're hitting the ground running, and we cannot wait to do this semester with you guys. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Take care.